Hi everyone, welcome back again to your Fenscast, the monthly podcast from Fens, where we discuss Fens activities, various events, and interesting topics in European neuroscience. This month, we're joined by Professor Gaia Navarino, who is a professor and a group leader at Vienna's Institute of Science and Technology, Austria, or VISTA. Before moving to Austria, she worked as a research fellow in San Diego, the University of California, as well as the Max Delbruck Center for Molecular Medicine in the Helmholtz Association at Center for Molecular Neurobiology at Hamburg. Her research investigates genes underlying inherited forms of neurodevelopmental disorders, including epilepsy, intellectual disability, and autism. She's also a very active member of the VISTA group in Austria, which we'll be hearing about today. Hi, Gaia. It's great to have you here joining us on the Fenscast this month. So let me just begin by asking you, how did you become a neuroscientist in the first place?
Hello, and thank you for inviting me. That's actually a very tough question. I became a neuroscientist for passion to try to really understand the intricacies of the brain, but also because as a mother, I always been fascinated by diseases of the brain and especially diseases of the childhood, so pediatric cognitive and brain issues.
Okay, and can you tell me maybe a little bit about your current research, because you study neurodevelopmental disorders?
Yes, so the major focus of my lab is neurodevelopmental disorders, and more specifically autism spectrum disorders and epileptic encephalopathies and intellectual disability. So we are studying really going from the genetics of those conditions to try to understand the underlying molecular mechanisms, because we want to understand what is the cause and what are the causes and mechanisms underlying the disorders. On the other side, because we believe that by studying those conditions, we also can learn something more about the brain in general.
Okay, and what are the main techniques that you would use to study those questions?
That's a tough question, because usually we are not sort of technique-driven, but really question-driven. So an interesting thing when you're studying those disorders is that when you, for instance, identify a gene, or when you start working with a gene that has been associated with those disorders, you rarely have really a clear view about what this gene or the product of that gene is doing. So specifically, although we have about roughly 20,000 genes in the human DNA or protein coding genes, we know the function of a very, very little fraction of those. And so in many cases, when we identify a gene and mutated in patients, we are not able to say at the onset what is the function of that gene. And even in the case when we really know the molecular, or we think to know the molecular function of that gene, let's say chromatin remodeler, we in fact do not know what is the function of that specific gene or the product of that gene in the context of the brain development. So yeah, so we'll go back to your question, because you ask what are the techniques. This comes together with the fact that sometimes we are studying ion channels and transporters, sometimes we are studying chromatin remodelers. So we are using from electrophysiology to deep sequencing in sort of an interchangeable manner, and depending really a lot on the project we are changing.
Okay. And I mean, it sounds fascinating, but what, I suppose, are the major changes you've seen in this area in recent years? What are the major developments you've noticed?
Well, obviously, the very first one was the fact that since roughly 15 years now, we are able to sequence in a high throughput manner the human genome, and before the human exons and now our genome. So this really has enabled the identification of genetic mutations underlying those disorders. And this has been revolutionary in a way. So before we were also doing, but it was more the low-hanging fruit. And now it's really a revolution, because we can really associate many more genes to this class of disorders. So now we are facing, or since a few years now, we are facing the next issue, which is genetics is throwing to us a lot of genes, and now we have to start finding or making sense out of those. So that was a big revolution, and this now comes with the follow-up that is the next sequencing technology, which is single-cell RNA, but also ADAC sequencing, chip sequencing, and proteomics, eventually soon single-cell proteomics, metabolomics, and so on and so forth. So those have been very important to try to understand this class of disorders, and though also pose big challenges when it comes to analyzing all this data and try to understand how heterogeneous group of disorders kind of converge in similar pictures.
And during that time period in the last 15 years or so, have you seen much of a change in, say, the public understanding or public perception of conditions like intellectual disability, autism, and others?
Yes, absolutely. So this is an extremely complicated topic. And namely is that awareness has increased, luckily. And in fact, with that also numbers of diagnosis cases, which is really a plus and the good side of the communication and the education. On the other side, there has been also a lot of discussion about, for instance, when we talk about autism spectrum disorders, whether this is a real disorder, so whether this has to be treated, and so on and so forth. So there are some groups that believe that this is a sort of a character trait. I always say, like, for instance, myself, my group works really on severe cases of autism spectrum disorders. So those are really conditions where usually parents and patients trust that this is sort of prevents a normal type of life. But obviously, there's been much more discussion on this topic. And this is a very delicate topic that needs attention.
Yeah, of course. And there are no easy answers to these questions.
Probably.
But staying on the topic of, I suppose, public engagement and public outreach. So you're involved with the VISTA group in Vienna. Can you tell us a bit about what the group is, what it does, and how you became involved with it?
Yeah, thank you for bringing this up, because this is a project that is very close to my heart. So this really started from multiple layers, but one thing is that as an institute, so the Institute of Science Technology, Austria, is a relatively new institute, but we really believe that we, as institutes, as a scientist, we have a responsibility to engage in science education and make it available of what we're doing to the public. And so you have never been here, but the people that will listen, most of them. But if you would come here, you will see that ISTA is sort of starting to be a large campus. And one characteristic that we have is really that we have a lot of bridges. So physical bridges, so between buildings, across the street, and also in different contexts. So the way we really see our science education and ISTA that you hinted to is really the bridge between scientists and society. So now that we are sort of accepted the thing that we do have this responsibility to engage with the public, we wanted to make a real effort to establish new ways of communicating with the public, meaning not just schools, but also teachers and so on and so forth. So VISTA is an effort that practically a team of people that works toward try to connect scientists with people. And it's very important that it's not just about bringing them facts, which we believe is not extremely important, but rather to really educate the people in understanding the process of science that is way more.
It sounds fantastic. So how did you find yourself involved with the group? Or was it always your intention to work in this area?
Well, again, I'm fascinated about how kids are learning about disorders of cognitions in pediatric ages. And so I was always fascinated. And then at one point I was given the opportunity by the institute to sort of supervise this effort. And so I was appointed by ISTA as a vice president for science education and really to develop this effort. So it was a sort of combination of things. So one side, my science was somehow connected to that. On the other side, my personal interest. And then the other side, sort of the opportunity that it was given by the institute.
Right. And I suppose one of the trickiest things about trying to explain scientific ideas to the public or to children is trying to convey something extremely complex in an understandable or a graspable way. How do you approach that? What's your approach to a very complex topic?
I see that we are trying to explain complex topics, but in general, as I mentioned before, we are really not aiming to kind of give a ready-made facts to people, but rather really tell them how is the process we are going through when we're doing research. And in fact, one of my favorite example that I have, or tool that I have when we go out, for instance, to schools, but also to, you know, we go to restaurants, we go to pubs and many other places, is a very simple experiment that is a closed box where there are, out of this box are coming a lot of strings. And so if you pull one string and one goes in, if you pull another string, so they are different colors. And so those strings are moving in and out of the box depending on how you're pulling it. And then you ask the people, what is inside that box? What do you think is inside? And so the people start making hypotheses about, well, maybe there are rings, maybe they are connected some way, and so on and so forth. And so you are listening all of that, and then they are looking at you, waiting for the answer. And you tell them at the end that this is a closed box, so you will not be able to open the box. And so that all what you can do are hypotheses and pulling in and out and try to understand based on experiments whether the hypothesis was true. This is a very, very simple thing, just to explain what the process of science is. And all the process of science is, at the beginning, the people is very sort of puzzled and actually even a little bit angry because we are not giving the solution. But it's a very nice example about how you can explain very complex things in a very simple way and making the point that science is not just a complex fact.
It's a lovely analogy and really effective. And I think analogies can be brilliant for trying to explain complex ideas to the public. One of my favorite things that Vista does is the science tuk-tuk. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how it works and what you do with it?
Yeah, this is my Italian nature. This is a science tuk-tuk, but for now it's a little app. So there's a little car that usually goes around parts to sell ice creams. And in fact, instead of having ice cream inside, we have a lab on the road. And the nice thing is that this is a little electric thing, so that can really go anywhere. So it goes around Austria, but so in Austria, there are those very special places that are called Eurica, that they are like little restaurants on the top of some hills where there people go there when it's nice and sunny eventually to spend an evening, afternoon. So we go there, for instance, with that little app and or in parks. And we're just trying to engage with young kids, but also adults, we go to parties, really to make science accessible. And so what we're doing are science shows, that the show is not just, again, it's not just a magic thing. It's really explaining real science to people or to explain things through real science. And also one example is Vienna is a city of music. And so one of the show we are doing is explaining the physics of music. So we have very effective visuals to really show how this works. So practically we are explaining real life or everyday life topics with science. And then our hope is that eventually people will also do videos of those things and putting them online so that we can spread a little bit.
Great. So you go to schools and parks and other places, or where do you normally bring the tuk-tuk?
Yes, we can go really literally anywhere. So for instance, here we have those Heineken's that are little restaurants on top of the hills where people go and spend a few hours, especially in summer. So we can go and drive there. But if there is a special event like that, eventually you will see the science tuk-tuk going around France as well. So any place where a very little car can move in, then we are there.
It sounds like a brilliant idea. And still on the topic of science communication and public engagement, do you guys have anything special planned for this year's Brain Awareness Week?
Yeah, we have always special things. For this one, actually, we were working, I think, more on the woman's side to show that there are a lot of women also engaging all the interest in neuroscience and how the brain works. Then, of course, we are having a number of activities that are around the neurosciences. But it's not just focused on what will happen during this week, but also happen throughout the year. So sort of something that we are doing is the Neuroscience Young Academy, where talented kids from schools can come here on campus and spend 1 or 2 days per month doing real experiments.
Ah, that's brilliant. It's a fantastic opportunity for them. And I think in recent years, we've seen such a great increase in science communication and public engagement. So maybe finally, before I let you go, I wanted to ask, what would be your advice for someone who hasn't really engaged with public engagement or outreach so far? How would they start?
So I must admit that for me, it's very important to engage with public, but also engage with people that knows how to engage with the public. This is it's not something that is coming alone. So it's not just about being a good storyteller, which is definitely important. And so I would always suggest to people that are interested in communicating with people just to try to really tell the story to their grandparents and see whether this works out. On the other side, though, I would really recommend especially to young people or student postdocs that are interested in that, you're really getting into the very fascinating topic of science education that is not just about communication, but it's really about finding different ways and new ways to really not just communicate, but to educate the public. And so there are many different opportunities now around Europe, and certainly like at ISTA, we are very, very, very happy if you get in touch with us because you're interested in such a topic. We have a very skilled team, and we have also, mostly for internal people, fellowships.
Brilliant. And I think in most countries now, there's some form of organized science communication, like Pint of Science or various other things. So it's a case, I suppose, of seeking them out and engaging with people, as you say. That's fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us today, Gaia. And we look forward to all the activities of this during Brain Awareness Weekend.
Thank you so much for this, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the FENSCast. Before you go, FENS is delighted to remind you that the call for regular registration for the FENS Forum 2024 is now open. Don't forget to register by 14 May to secure your spot in the biggest neuroscience event in Europe. FENS and its host societies, the Austrian Neuroscience Association and the Hungarian Neuroscience Society, are looking forward to welcoming the whole neuroscience community in Vienna, Austria, from 25th to the 29th of June, 2024. And if you're interested in science outreach, make sure to follow the many events taking place across the world during this year's Brain Awareness Week, unfolding now from 11th to the 17th of March. This week serves as a vibrant celebration and promotion of global brain research and aims to amplify awareness of its continual progress and major benefits to society. Supported by the Dana Foundation, FENS is proud to announce the funding of 38 projects across 22 European countries this year. Check out our social media channels to learn more about each one. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to follow us on FENS.org, X, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube to stay updated. See you next time.